It was a box that wasn't a box. The covers slid sideways away from each other, enclosing a packet of thin, remarkably thin, slices that had black marks on them, lots of little tiny black marks all in orderly rows. What a strange object. How complicated. He put the first one back on the shelf and took a second, smaller one. It, too, fell open. Johnny found himself staring at a picture. It didn't have depth. At first it seemed to, but his finger told him it was just a flat plane. The object there was a big red circle, much bigger than a strawberry, much smoother. It had a stem, and alongside it there was a black tent with a crossbar in the middle of it. He turned the sheet. There was a picture of a bee. No bee was ever that big, but this was certainly a bee. It, too, looked three-dimensional until his finger told him it wasn't. And a black thing beside it had two bulges on it. Johnny turned another sheet. There was a cat, a small cat to be sure, but it was definitely a cat. And it had a curved black thing beside it like a new moon. A few pages later there was a picture of a fox, and beside it was a black pole with two flags coming off it. Suddenly, a quiver went through Johnny. He held his breath. He grabbed the first object he had taken and pried it open again. There was the tent. There was the bee's black mark. Yes, and there was the pole with two flags. He held the two rectangles, his head in a whirl. He stared at them. There was a meaning here. Foxes, bees, cats, tents, bulges, new moons. These things had meanings in them. But about what? Animals? Weather? He could sort all that out later. He crowded the two rectangles into his belt pouch. Anything that was connected to weather and animals had value. Rectangles with meaning in them. The idea made bright lights pop in your skull. He replaced the protective sheet, went back out the window, replaced the metal covering as well as he could, and whistled Windsplitter over, dropping down to the horse's back. Johnny looked around him expansively. Who knew what things of enormous value were in the great village? He felt rich, excited. There was no reason at all for his people to stay cooped up there in the mountains. Here was shelter and to spare. Here was firewood growing in the streets. Here were rooms and rooms and rooms. And come to think of it, he felt better since he had been away from the mountain meadow, better physically. And it hadn't taken a year, actually just a few days. He gathered up the lead rope of his pack horse and they trotted briskly along the wide paths toward the eastern part of the great village. Although his eyes were busily taking it all in, his mind was engrossed in organizing a migration from the mountains down to this place. What he would have to pick up for evidence to convince them. What he was going to say to Staffer. How they could transport their goods. Maybe build a cart? Maybe there were carts right here in the great village. He could round up some horses. These piles of red dust he saw along either side of the wide paths from time to time might once have been carts of a sort. It was hard to figure out what shape they had really had, they were so caved in. The impression of a wheel, sheets of translucent rock. No, they hadn't been horse carts. Or had they? He began to look at such objects more closely. And then he saw the insect. 12. It was very bright daylight now, and there it sat. There could be no mistaking it. Alien. Surely it must be an insect. Only cockroaches looked like that, or beetles. No, cockroaches. But there were no cockroaches that big. Not 30 feet long and 10 feet high and maybe 12 feet side to side. A horrible brown color, and smooth. Johnny had stopped. The lead horse bunched up behind. The thing was sitting squarely in the middle of the wide path. It seemed to have two eyes in front, slitted. There was nothing like this on the plains or in the mountains, and he had seen nothing like it in the great village center. It looked new, with very little dust on it, and shiny. He felt it was alive. There was something about it. Yes, alive. Not inanimate metal, but a living thing. And he saw what made him think so. There had been a slight rocking motion. Something moved behind the slitted eyes. Johnny, making no sudden movements, turned Windsplitter and, pulling the lead horse, began to move away in the direction from which he had approached. He had already noted that these paths were mostly rectangular, and that you could go all the way around a group of buildings and come back to the same place. There was open country to the east, not very far. He would go down a side path and then circle back and get out into the plains. Hopefully, he could outrun it, if it moved. There was an ear-splitting roar. Johnny glanced back in terror. The thing rose up 3 feet above the ground. Dust flew from below it. It began to inch forward. It was alive. He put Windsplitter into a gallop straight down the street. He passed one corner path, two. The thing was falling behind. It was now 2 corners back. He swerved Windsplitter up a side path, yanking the lead horse with him. They reached another corner, and again he turned. Up ahead were 2 tall buildings. He'd keep going and reach the open country. He'd make it. And then suddenly there was a sheet of flame. Ahead of him, the right-hand building exploded apart. Its top slid slowly down and into the street ahead, blocking it. Spattered with dust, Johnny hauled up short. He could hear the roaring of the thing somewhere beyond the rubble. He listened, holding his breath. The position of the roar was changing. It was shifting to the right. He traced it with his ears. It was going on down the other street. Now it was level with him. Now it was getting behind him. The thing had somehow blocked the street ahead of him and then gone on, planning to come up behind him. He was trapped. Johnny looked at the smoking mound of fresh rubble ahead of him. It rose 20 feet above the pavement, a steep barricade. There was no panic in him now. He slowed the hard pounding of his heart. The thing to do was wait until the monster was right in the street behind him and then go over that barricade. He sidled Windsplitter back to get a good run. The thing was roaring down the side path behind him. Now it was turning. He glanced back. There it was, wisps of smoke coming out of its nostrils. Johnny put the heel to Windsplitter. He yanked on the lead rope. "Ee-yah!" shouted Johnny. The horses sprinted at the barricade, rough and full of loose stones, dangerous. Up they scrambled, rubble slid. Pray the gods, no broken legs. Up they went. They hit the top. One glance back showed the thing rolling up to the very bottom of the barricade. Johnny sent the horses down in a turmoil of tumbling debris. They hit the street before them at a run and kept running. The walls racketed with the thunder of their run. Johnny swerved through a checkerboard of paths, edging to the open country. He could not hear the roaring thing now over the powerful thud of the running hoofs. Further and further, the buildings were thinning. He saw open country between 2 structures to his right and skidded down off the embankment and raced for freedom. As soon as he had free running space everywhere but toward the town, he slowed. Windsplitter and the lead horse were blowing and puffing. He walked them until they caught their breath, casting his eyes restlessly up and down the edges of the town behind them. Then he caught the roaring again. He strained his eyes, watching. There it was. It slid out from among the buildings and started straight toward him. He put the horses up to a trot. The thing was closing the distance. He put the horses up to a run. The thing not only closed the distance but started to pass him. Johnny swerved at right angles. The thing banked into a turn and flashed by him, went well ahead, turned, and blocked his way. Johnny pulled up. There it was, ugly, roaring, gleaming. He turned around and began to run away from it. It let out a blasting roar, scorched by him, and again stopped, blocking his way. Johnny's face tightened into determination. He took his biggest kill club from his belt. He put the thong solidly on his wrist. He cast off the lead horse. Walking Windsplitter, he went up ahead of the thing. It didn't move. He went about 100 feet in front of the thing. It didn't move. He carefully spotted the position of a slitted eye. He began to whirl the kill club. It swooshed in the air. He put a heel to Windsplitter and they raced straight at the thing. The kill club, carried with the full speed of the running horse, whooshed down straight at the slitted eye. The crash of impact was deafening. Johnny slowed beyond the thing. It had not moved. He trotted Windsplitter back to the original position, 100 feet in front of the thing. He turned and made ready for a second run. The lead horse came up behind him to its habitual place. Johnny glanced at it and then back at the thing. He calculated the distance and the run to strike at the other's slitted eye. He touched a heel. Windsplitter plunged forward. And then, a great gout of yellow bloomed out from between the eyes. Johnny was struck a blow like all the winds of High Peak rolled into one. Windsplitter caught the full force of it. Up into the air went horse and rider. Down they came with a shuddering crash against the earth.